Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning, warning.
We've got to stop them. They're going to kill us all.
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human beings.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, by all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Rest, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyalty? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me,
give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given rights, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, in Studio B at revolution.radio.
Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good.
Hey, thanks for joining us again. Another Tuesday night.
A polite gunfight.
Polite gunfight. We're on Revolution Radio. It is good to be back.
It's good to be back. It's a tough week. Certainly tougher for others.
Tougher for others, for sure.
I think everyone's seen the Taliban made the moves and finally pretty much taken over all of Afghanistan upon the U.S. exit, taking over scores of equipment that were intended for Afghan forces to use against them. But in the face of the departure, the retreat, they've seized ground and have taken over Kabul, amongst other places.
Right.
My understanding. I've got pretty dismal outlooks on all this. Probably out of step with most people. I was prepared to stay there for quite some time. That means nothing, of course, because I am but the one taxpayer and I can't fund the whole excursion myself. But I have concerns for the future. It was 5 years between their taking Afghanistan in 1996 and the 9/11 attacks. Maybe it's a new reform Taliban.
The kinder, gentler Taliban.
Kinder, gentler Taliban, you know, boosting their image a little bit. I shared with a friend that they kind of made a comment that really made it sound like they were the 64 seed going all the way in the NCAA tournament, the wild card winning the Super Bowl. They had this comment. Let me pull it up. That was just so from sports world to me.
That, yes, the Kindler Gentler Taliban. The Kindler Gentler and some butcher knife.
Yeah, well, I still think they would love to take their show on the road or have someone take it on the road for them.
Absolutely.
You know, the idea that they're not going to be a safe haven for terrorists again, I think is low. Low odds, I would assign to that. For that reason alone, I thought it was worthwhile. Even actually much more so than Iraq, because Iraq wasn't where the 9/11 attacks were planned. Let me see. What did they say that struck me so much, like as an ESPN comment? Taliban spokesman Shaheen said that they weren't surprised by their successful military offensive because we have roots among the people, because it was a popular uprising of the people, because we knew we had been saying this for the last 20 years, he said. But no one believed us. And now when they saw, when they're taken by surprise, because before they didn't believe. That totally sounds like they were just like the underdog team. And here they are winning the big show.
They got the gold.
They had to get the gold. They did. They backed down not one, but two superpowers. You know, maybe this is Mujahideen, which is what they came from before. Now they ran us down or wore us down. And away we go. Forced the jobs are back. We're not going to say anything about whether or not you should or shouldn't wear a job, but I think you shouldn't be forcing one. But sure are now. If you like religious conservatism, they're certainly up there. They were shelling old Buddhist monuments that were in the country for thousands of years, as far as I knew, and that was long before this. So they're not one of your more woke governments.
So they,
Nancy, go ahead.
I know they were tearing down like Buddhist and old.
Oh, they weren't tearing them down. They shot rockets into them.
Well, right. They destroyed them. Yeah. Are there any left there? Are they?
If there were, they were overlooked.
Right.
And, they won't be left there now.
Yeah, there's some pretty impressive statues in homage to Buddha, like tall structures.
Oh, yeah, gigantic. Yep. They found them offensive, so they shot rockets into them.
Hmm.
I did read, I think someone, you were interacting with someone on your page, and she came from the international security world, and she was saying they're inheriting a tough set of circumstances to be a ruler in. And I guess we can hope for that to be a limiting factor on them recruiting terrorist organizations to come in and work on their soil, because they're going to be too busy, you know, tending to what their population needs them to tend to. I still think North Korea does a pretty good job of keeping their populace fed at starvation levels and can, you know, wreak some havoc around.
Yeah, so of the Taliban taking over, I mean, we kind of signaled to them that we were leaving, right? It's kind of like,
yep. Well, they signed a peace treaty with Donald Trump in 2020.
The Taliban did.
Mm-hmm. And they're, you know, really adamant that they're all done the terrorism stuff.
That's not us. We changed our image.
What? We barely knew that guy.
Right.
OBL. What? New phone. Who's this? So that was signed with prior administration. So this was a foregone conclusion that this was going to happen. Did it happen? Have to happen so fast? Could we maybe have, you know, forge some sort of shared government? I'm going to argue that it was, we're pulling out, the answer to that was no.
Right. For whatever reason, I think you're not close to your mic or something. You'd like,
turn up my gain?
Maybe a little bit. Like you, You sound good, and all of a sudden you kind of fade into the background again for some reason.
Is that better? I turned the gain up.
Yeah, that is better.
The gain's way up.
Okay, lots to gain.
Lots to gain. So, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I think certainly I'd say Biden did a bad job here. The people hanging onto a airplane to try to get out of the country before they were, you know, thrown under a terror regime. Shouldn't go down well on his resume, for sure.
No.
How much of this was due to Bush taking his eye off the ball? Probably a lot. You can go back to him. Did Obama make things better or worse? That's tough to say. I mean, he was always drawing down. He was always, one hesitant to directly engage. There was certainly no surge under him. So Bush, you had, kind of Iraq separating the focus between two nearby but ultimately unrelated fronts. Obama always looking to just scale down, never trying to figure out what was best. And getting distracted with adventures of his own in Libya, obviously with Benghazi being his disaster. And now we have Biden's disaster. So here we are. Yet again, in my eyes, signaling to the world, America is befuddled and weak. I don't want to say that about our troops. Troops do what they're told to do. And they were told to evacuate. When there's no will behind them, the troops can't make us strong. I think the message we send to the world is we're a fairly weak and indulgent country. When you're no longer feeding our needs, we're done. That's clearly what was sent with Afghanistan, because you see a lot of people saying, I agree with what Biden said. The Afghanis weren't defending themselves, and it was complicated. We call them Afghanistan, but for them, there's a lot of tribal divisions and things like that. the idea that there was some sort of unified country, that's kind of put upon them from outside. We weren't arming people to fight in, regional tribal ways, arming the Kurds. We kind of just decided that, they're all going to fight together.
So the 300,000 troops that were referenced, were they really 300,000 troops, or are they just factions?
Yeah, I think there was a lot of conscripts, hey, you, why don't you be in the army? This wasn't truly a fighting force that was disciplined. And from what I'm reading, they lost all heart as soon as they heard America was out of here. And so for Biden to say, they weren't going to defend themselves. Okay. We wanted things to be better on a timetable of 20 years in an area of the world where they think in thousands of years.
Right. And why Afghanistan? I mean, it's not really a very hospitable place. Nope. It's not really a place awash of resources.
Just alive. Yeah, just tough to stay alive. I saw one person saying we should have tried to squeeze the resources out of there. There are no resources.
Right. Let's take all those rocks.
Right. There's rocks. There's opiates.
And sand. There's sand.
Lots of sand. Yeah. There were some tall statues of Buddha.
They could have sold those.
I'll turn into rubble. Into rubble.
Well, the Taliban doesn't want to sell those. Apparently they do get involved in the drug trade a bit, though. So.
Yeah.
Yay, they'll be back into that. So maybe the opiates in the United States will be cheaper now.
For having that whole religious faction to them. Do they partake in the drugs themselves, or they just sell
them? I remember reading an article a while back that it was much more about funding things. So they would force farmers to grow opiates, and the farmers didn't want to grow opiates because, food is good to have. So I mean, you're dealing with like hardscrabble, you know, sustenance farmers, you know, also being told to do this like commercial crop. That you know, in the best of circumstances, stuff. My take it doesn't grow terribly well there. But you know, apparently, opium does, or opiates, opioids, whatever you're cultivating, those poppies, I guess. So they would be forced into doing that, and then the Taliban would do it to exchange for whatever it was the Taliban exchanges things for. Yeah, I think this is going to be a, you know, we're back in business sign for a lot of people. Maybe not. Maybe everyone's mellowed out. I can't say I've got my pulse, finger on the pulse of the terrorist world. But I can't imagine, you know, that thing I read, you know, the underdog story isn't being told around the world now. You know, especially we stuck at the United States. We outlasted them. We won. 9/11 was our victory. And they didn't stop us. They might have shot the guy who planned it, but we as a entity outlasted them. That's what I think they're thinking to themselves. And I don't know that they're wrong. Because we went in to, you know, stop them. More than just shoot bin Laden, you know, we were going after the people that held him safe, although eventually he slipped out and went to Pakistan, and we did nothing about that either. And yeah, right,
Pakistan was our ally, we can't do that.
How did he get in there? He must have slipped in the back door. Oh no.
Gosh darn it, how do you do that?
He's a wizard. He's a magician. Yeah. So the stands are what they are. Taking two superpowers down now. They, you know, beat Russia in the, was the 80s, right? Mid-80s?
Yeah.
Mid-80s they left.
Yeah.
But through the late 70s to mid-80s, I think. Ran us out of town after 20 years. Because, you know, we just, man, wasn't paying off. That franchise had to close.
Right.
No, it just wasn't productive.
Right.
Maybe they won't smash any new planes in any more buildings anymore. Maybe that's all done. They can just terrorize Facebook now, right? So why you don't have to do anything crazy. Just post memes. Maybe they'll be content to post memes.
Meany memes, right.
Yeah, mean memes. Yeah, maybe that's it.
You must.
I expect the worst, though. I really do think this is going to be a new recruitment call. And just in general, around the region, I don't think Biden's going to put up a big fight.
So the you know, the Taliban, they refer to us as the infidels, right? They're not really hospitable to our lifestyle. Right, we're the great.
I haven't read explicitly they call us that, but I'm sure they would consider us, you know, the worst.
Right. we allow women to walk around with, you know, face, you know, coverings and everything.
Yeah, exactly, for sure. You know, and they're sexually indiscriminate in the United States. They would be against that.
Yeah, that female.
They would say that about us. That means. Go ahead.
That female reporter that, you know, had to don a hijab. Now, she used to wear, you know, she didn't have a head covering on. She used to, before the Taliban took over, when she went outside, that she wore the black kind of, you know, covering. But she didn't have the headpiece on. She didn't don the headpiece.
And now she does.
Now she does, yes.
What did Nancy Pelosi say about that? I thought it was a laugh riot. Pelosi's statement on the Taliban.
There's good people on both sides. Is that what you said?
That's right. You're funny.
While you're looking for that, so this Calissa Ward, she wears that. She wears the hijab and headdress and everything, and she's reporting. And then Taliban members came up and told her to stop because she's a woman. She can't report anymore.
She can't. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. The Taliban must know the world is watching its actions. We are concerned about reports regarding the Taliban's brutal treatment of Afghans, especially women and girls. Said the most powerful country in the world that just fled.
Yes.
I just don't know how it doesn't land, or it does and they just don't care, that we projected complete weakness by leaving. There's no strength that anyone sees in us pulling out. No one. No one is worried about us. No one is concerned. That's why they walked right in, because they knew we weren't going to be coming right for them.
Yeah, right. We weren't right around the corner saying, gotcha.
Right.
Round them up, guys.
Yeah, they didn't have drones circling the city, you know, ready to light anybody up. So even drones, even like we could even have a drone pilot 10,000 miles away, not miles, but you know what I mean, thousands of miles away, ready to light anybody up coming into Kabul, you know, just to buy them time. Nope.
I don't think this surprises anybody, really. I mean,
it should not surprise him. No.
It should not surprise anybody.
Well, it surprised Biden.
Yes.
Didn't he say it was surprised with the speed with which they came in? I don't know. I don't know why.
I don't know. I mean, that's kind of politics. I mean, he kind of
had to act surprised.
Right. I mean, when he was saying, hey, they got 300,000 troops, they're going to be able to take care of it, they're going to be able to take care of themselves. They got to learn how to do it anyway. You know, we need to cut the cord here.
Right. But I mean, so they had, he had, well, maybe he didn't have to understand. Maybe he didn't want to understand. They're not going to get involved in a fight for their life when sooner or later they're going to run out of ammo and they're going to have nothing left because we are leaving them behind. They're being abandoned. And I get it. The idea is they weren't worth it. They weren't worth putting that through. What are we, the world's policemen? We to fix everybody's problems? Maybe it's ironic who's saying that. I mean, just that it's kind of, you know, guess you're tired, you're poor. I think everybody who was there was trying to get out should definitely be given sanctuary in the United States, because I think they are goners in Afghanistan.
Oh, yeah.
And we put him in that position. You know, it wasn't just a, this is the, what's the, was it the Ecuadorian gang, MI5? Or not MI5, it's British intelligence.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's Britain.
That's a different gang entirely. It's British Secret Service or British CIA. What's the street gang? MS-13.
Uh-huh.
MS-13. So it's not like someone trying to escape MS-13, and we can really say, oh, yeah, I didn't do it with MS-13. You'd have to have some long, convoluted argument where we were. But, yeah, when we go into a country and we start paying people to help us go after a particular group of people there, you know, we're going to be here forever. We're going to make you strong. We're going to make your own people. It'll be great. And then we're like, yeah, this really doesn't fit our timetable anymore. Sorry. We'll
I'm not so sure the Afghan people were interested in that, though, Aaron.
I don't think they were.
You know, entirely. So they don't care.
Well, I don't know that they don't care. I think it was, you know, they see people coming in and spending. I mean, they were painting over signs in downtown Kabul, so they're living a totally different life than they are anticipating living with the Taliban. I mean, they're painting over pictures of women on buildings. I think we spent so much time trying to craft Afghanistan into the image we wanted it to be that we weren't ever building what they wanted. I think that's probably part of the problem. But regardless, the thought, yeah, that this is going to take 20 years and they're going to be like a own freestanding country is nuts.
Right.
I mean, we haven't left.
But I think you're right.
We haven't left Germany yet after World War II. We haven't left. We're still helping Japan. But they make us money. Well, that's let's be honest about what this is all about. But the message it sends, I just hate.
Yeah.
I just hate it. And I don't know what the answer was, but I would have continued to spend money. Because I just think it sends this message that we're weak. And maybe the rich rip the Band-Aid approach is what's going to work in the long term. And maybe I'm just being too adulatory towards the Taliban. Maybe they're going to have too much trouble. You know, they're just goat farmers or whatever. What are they going to do? You know, Osama bin Laden was a once-in-a-generation terrorist mastermind. And we're not going to see anybody like him again. I hope so.
Well... I don't know how the you know, the Afghanis are gonna kind of fight back, since
they're not gonna fight back.
Their chips are way down.
Their chips are totally down.
Their resources are kaput.
And we've given the Taliban armament. And I shouldn't say given, because one, some people do think we gave it to them, and we didn't. It's important to understand this is very important. They took it from us.
Right.
There was giving would be some sort of power that we had with them. We had none. They took the guns from us. They took the tanks. They took the helicopters from us. Perfect weakness. No way to cover this one up. This wasn't some covert deal that we could claim that we're trying to buy power. Nope. They took it from us. And they're going to tell the world they took it from us, and everybody knows. And Russia's laughing at us, and they're going to be able to tell everybody else in that region, see... That's what the Americans were.
Is there any chance? I mean, there's no chance that Biden's gonna say we're going back and.
Oh, I mean, he's sending more people in. They're just trying to do airlifts out of there. No, they're not gonna they're not gonna reengage. The Democrats certainly don't have the will to reengage. In Iraq, in Afghanistan, they don't have any heart for war.
No.
Honestly, if this happened under Trump's watch on a slower scale, I don't think it would happen as fast. But if the Taliban came in back to power, I don't know. The Republicans would be trying to get them knocked out either. As happens, I think, would be the attitude. I think it's a small minority of people that are of the viewpoint that I am. I think most people are happy to be out of there because it wasn't producing, you know, return on investment. And I get it. I don't think it was ever going to return on investment. I just think we're going to be lucky if there isn't another few planes flying into buildings. Or whatever the new attack's going to look like.
Right.
I think the Islamic terrorism community has been on the back burner for like a while now, after being in the forefront of the war on terror for so long. And I'm not saying all Islamic folks are bad. I'm just talking about the particular group of people. So just be clear.
The radical faction.
Yeah. The Wahhabists, them, the people that want death to the West. Them. I mean, sure, they were active in like Israel, but that was more focused on like Israel itself rather than like just Western values in general. I mean, you saw shootings in Ferris and in Miami, well, Texas. Miami one was a little weird, I guess. But small time, nickel dime stuff. Not 20 people coordinating a mass kill together. I don't know that we're going to be so lucky. For 5 more years, we'll see. Maybe we'll be lucky. Maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe we'll have other bigger, meaner fish to fry. But even then, I think it's going to be due to the fact that we you know, can't hold a tiny little, you know, fend off a relatively weak force. I can't imagine that China wouldn't feel emboldened by this.
So, why doesn't Pakistan just kind of want to take over them?
Pakistan doesn't want to take over because Pakistan's got its own problems, but they're certainly going to chat with them.
They have to now, right?
Sure. Everyone has to now.
Is it Sharif? Who was in charge of Pakistan last we checked?
The guy who left?
Yeah.
The guy who had to escape the presidential palace?
Yeah.
President President of Pakistan.
Sharif?
President of Afghanistan or Pakistan?
Pakistan.
Is that true? Sharif Alvi.
Yes.
I can't imagine him not making peaceful overtures towards the Taliban regime.
Right. Because he doesn't want any trouble.
Sure. Who wants trouble? And if, hey, things come up.
You think Taliban's going to try to infiltrate into the United States to the southern border?
Don't have to get into the southern border. They flew planes.
What's that?
They didn't come in through Mexico. They came in through visas through Saudi Arabia. They got travel visas, and they smashed planes in our building. Don't worry about sweeping into the border. They're more sophisticated than that. They've got more money.
You know, those freedoms we don't have anymore from banking and all those and all that.
You have a whole new type of currency to do that now.
That's true. But I mean, you know, all those restrictions and all the changes in banking and all the new banking laws to not fund terrorists and terrorist groups and everything like that.
Well, if you apply to cryptocurrency, then you're all set.
Right. Well, that's true. What say you, Mr. Ty?
Or sunny optimism.
Yeah. Well, I happen to agree with your sunny optimism. They have no will or desire to fight anyway, so that was a lost cause on our part, you know. We should have smashed them and left, you know.
We should rebuild. We should have smashed them. At the very least. We never had the will to do that either.
I mean, it seems like we just, hey, you know, what can we do? There's just big hills and rocky roads.
Yeah, big hills and rocks.
And there's lots of caves. What are we supposed to do here, you know?
What can we do? They disappear in the hills and then come back later.
They disappear in the hills and they throw these IEDs on our road. And you know, what are we going to do?
Right.
I mean,
I don't know how you didn't know that going in.
Well, that's right. It's just, you know, the Pentagon fights, you know, every war every day. They knew everything there, right?
I'm sure a simulation came up where they knew we got overrun quick. Their Kabul would get overrun quick. And yeah, I'm sure that was simulated out, role played, game, you know, war gamed out.
Mr. President, 99% sure things are getting overrun in the first 5 days.
That had to at least been a 25% chance, right?
At least.
If not 99%. And if you ask me, just someone walked up and say, hey, if U.S. pulled out of Afghanistan, how long do you think it would take them to take the Taliban to take over?
I'd dead. Say, dead.
Quick.
Dead. They're all dead.
Right. They're just hung in the streets. What do you know in Afghanistan? Stuff I've seen on the news.
Right.
And that's it. No secret. You know, I don't get any secret Pentagon reports. But I don't know why. Yeah. I don't know why that Biden would simultaneously be saying these people are, you know, they're weak. They won't stand up for themselves. And he's surprised it's going to take a week to get overrun. Seems like it's all together.
Right.
So, yeah. But Afghanistan, but right on the border of Iran and Pakistan and Turkmenistan and Tajikistan.
But Jeff, you know, brings up a good point. It's like, did they really want it? Or did they just,
I think they didn't want the Taliban, but that doesn't mean they wanted us either. I don't have a good answer of what you do there. Because the Taliban, hid the organization that killed us. Or tried, threw airplanes into our building, killed 3,000 U.S. citizens. Maybe we should have just gone in and shot Osama bin Laden. I don't know. The idea that it's going to be like we take out one guy and he kills 3,000. Does that sound like we stalemated? I don't know.
Right.
I really don't know how to fight this. So I'm very glum. And certainly we've got other problems to solve, and maybe that's the idea. We got to simplify the board. Can't help them all. And if Afghanistan is going to be just, you know, we'll let them deal with their own problems, and you know, there were Ajibs and you know, people that were maybe slightly less orthodox again and hung in the street. Oh. At least the ropes organic.
Well, we spent about $1 trillion in Afghanistan over 20 years.
That's a claim. I thought that was between Iraq and.
Okay, I'm not sure, but the $1 trillion was bandied about.
Yeah, in Afghanistan.
I mean, there's your infrastructure package, Biden. You know.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Well, maybe that's it. How much did the U.S. spend in Afghanistan? So it was over.
For people that did not care.
That's apparently so. How much did the U.S. spend in Afghanistan? Biden has no regrets of withdrawing Afghanistan after a 20-year war, which has estimated to cost trillions, except.
Yeah, come on. He can't have no regrets.
Somewhere, right?
He has to have a little regrets.
$2 trillion. No, $2 trillion. Well, maybe we could have cost to vaccinate the world against COVID, $25 billion. We probably could fund that already. Cost to pay off our debt to China, $1.1 trillion. Cost to end world hunger, $265 billion. What did the money go to? Five areas of spending identify the cost of the war product. DOD oversee contingencies operation budget, $933 billion. I'm sorry, I'm sure there was waste in there.
Of course.
Defense Department base budget war related increase, $443 billion. Again, I'm sure there was waste. Estimated interest on war borrowing to date, $530 billion. Veterans care for Afghan war, I have to pay this, $296 billion. That's vet care, certainly. Estimated 241,000 lost their lives as a direct result of the war in Afghanistan. Efforts to train the military and police forces fell short. Obviously so. A third of the force had to be retrained each year because of desertion and casualty rates. I couldn't tell you how to win. So I'll put that right out there. That's why I don't run for office. So what? How would this go down under Trump? Most optimistic scenario. What do you got? What does Trump do here? So Trump signed, like I said, he signed the pact, the peace treaty. So this was his policy as well. Not to say he was going to retreat the way Biden did, but you know the ultimate objective was to leave. And Biden certainly didn't like, whoa, 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 peace treaty. Rip that up. You know, he certainly didn't say that. So that was, you know, certainly he was on the same page with Trump on that one. But what does Trump do here? If he gets reelected, you know, January 6th is all about him crowing and, you know, being happy and then Democrats, you know, pulling their hair out. So that all happens. We come to this point. What would he be doing differently? What would have, you think stepped up military? What do you foresee him doing here?
Did he ever say he was going to pull troops out?
They did sign a peace treaty in 2020.
Okay, so he would have theoretically abided by that.
Well, see, that might have just been to stop shooting. You know, I don't know.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I just think it's always a bad idea to let the enemy know your schedule for departure, you know?
Well, that's what he was saying about Iraq. Trump had said that about how Obama handled Iraq, which, you know, a lot of people say led to the
Rise of ISIS.
You know, because as we abandoned it, they kind of, you know, rose to power.
Yeah.
So yeah, again, I don't make it sound like I'm really against U.S. policy in general.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't say that the peace treaty that he signed was a we're going to pull troops out, or if it was a
he wrote. So I'm looking at BBC. This is Feb 2020. So, you know, right on the eve of COVID, you know, looming over us. President Trump said it had been a long, hard journey to Afghanistan. It's time, after all these years, to bring our people back home. Talks between the Afghan government and the Taliban are due to follow. So, under the agreement, the militants also agreed not to allow Al-Qaeda or any other extremist organization to operate in the areas they control. The way he said talks between the Afghan government and the Taliban are due to follow certainly makes it sound like there was some expectation that the government was going to be, you know, protecting its own interests. And maybe that's ultimately where I'm wrong in this, that if you can't get them to stand up for themselves, then you can't ever win anyway, and we'll just have to, you know, fight them wholly in a war once they play their hand that way, which I think will come sooner or later. I really believe the Taliban wants to do something to show we're not all wasting time, Mr. Trump added. If bad things happen, we'll go back with a force like no one's ever seen. So with that, if we were to take him at his word, it does sound like if they made a move on Kabul, we would be showing back up. If that's how he was honestly feeling. I really never knew with Trump. He might have said F it too.
I don't know. I mean, he could have.
But he certainly said that. And that's nothing. Biden made it perfectly clear that's not in the cards.
Right. I mean, whether or not he would have acted or not was another thing.
He said he was going to. He did say he was.
But he was not seen as the, you know, docile grandpa figure that, you know, is a Democrat, which is known, you know, not known to be the hawks.
No, they're not the hawk party.
Right.
100%, 110%. The Democrats are not seen as hawks. And I think one of the reasons why the Taliban were pushing for this, or I don't know who's pushing for it, but one of the reasons why I think the Taliban were okay with signing it was either they get a deal with Trump and that, you know, gets them some breathing room. And I'm assuming ill of them, just to be absolutely clear. They either get some breathing room with Trump, or Trump loses and they can go for broke. Alternative scenario B came up and they went for broke, and here they are. World champs. They're not facing any threat from any true threat from Biden, short of being forced into something, like if there's some mass terrorist attack. And I'll be honest, even then, I think it's just certain people have to steer clear of some SEAL teams.
Huh.
If we have a 3,000-plus person mass killing, all I think anybody wants to hear now is, we got the guy who was behind it. And that'll be enough.
Right.
And the issue that I see there is that might actually not be enough.
Well, you're our listener, Miss Amy.
Yes.
Agrees with you. So.
Oh.
and you, Mr. Ty. She agrees with you guys. So our listener is agreeing. So that's good.
Yeah, a listener agrees. I think it's pretty depressing, because I think on the world scene, it just shows that we are It's not just Islamic terrorism that we're going to be having trouble facing. It's anything that's going to require us to be seen as strong.
Right.
I would be throwing fastballs at every boat, plane, unit out there. Not, and again, this has nothing to do with the troops. But the troops are going to follow orders. If they're scared up top, and that's, I think, what you've seen with Afghanistan, you know, the troops down below have know that there's no support up top, there's no point.
Hmm.
So that's my depressing thoughts for the day.
And, yeah, well, it's not like you're, you know, being dramatic about anything. It's.
I'm only trying to go by history. I remember how shocked we all were when we found that people hated us to the point where they would kill 3,000 of our citizens.
On our soil.
On our soil. You know, not military, you know, civilians to show that we were weak.
Man, and they wanted so many more.
They totally wanted more.
How many people? I can't even remember the total. How many people usually ponder in and out of out of the World Trade Center?
They were light by thousands.
I thought it was even more than that. I thought there was like tens of thousands.
It may have been. I just it may have been.
I think the initial death toll was like 5,000 or 6,000. And then
knocked it down to like 30 some.
Yeah.
33 some. But yeah, yeah, it could have been. How many people were in that?
Well, and they hit the Pentagon. If the Pentagon hadn't been hardened,
fortified, yeah.
Recently, that would have been more. And if the plane in Shanksville would have made it to where it was intended to go, There would have been more than just the passengers and crew on that flight.
Well, 3,000 died. 10,000 others were treated for injuries. So they could have easily done just more with the damage there, and they weren't even in full swing yet. A couple more hours, then would have been even worse. And yeah, the Shanksville plane. Where's that Shanksville plane headed?
I don't know. Some people say it was the Capitol Building.
They wouldn't have done it. They wouldn't have hit much in the Capitol because that wasn't in session, right?
September 11th? No. But I think maybe that has been more of a symbolic hit.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know why they say the Capitol and not the White House or, you know.
I mean, they probably could have aimed at the White House. Just, again, for, like you said, the symbolism of it. Maybe that was one time they got it on. I think between, you know, just your average jockeying for power with China, with an emergent like gray market, pseudo criminal Russia and other countries, your standard like state powers in Saudi Arabia and Iran. I don't even know what to think about the Saudis anymore. That the new guys in charge is pretty crazy, if you ask me. Issues in the Middle East just wants leadership, and now you're going to have an emergent, I think, a re-emergent terrorist movement. This is just not the time it would be not projecting strength. And I think we projected weakness again.
Absolutely.
How do we get it back? I don't know. Does Joe Biden want power back? I don't think he does.
No.
I'll stand by that. I think he wants us to be seen as someone who maybe can protect our soil. But I certainly don't think he wants to be the guy that wants to project worldwide military force.
No, I think he wants to focus more on domestic issues and his infrastructure.
Infrastructure, student loans, Healthcare, Green New Deal.
Yep.
Being tough and negotiating carbon emission standards with China, which I would fall over last minute laughing about if I was a Chinese. Or you'll what?
Right.
Tell me what you'll do.
Yeah.
I'm going to park your trade deficit with us. Trying to see, and why don't you tell me what you'll do?
Yeah. Look at the trade deficit between us and China.
Right.
Oh, and most of your products, everything you buy, has some components made in China.
I lost an ear gel came off of one of my pair of my headless or my wireless headphones. Right on it, made in China, of course. Almost all of our electronic goods have something produced there. Unavoidable.
So right.
What are we gonna do?
You know, how are you gonna squeeze me? You can't. You don't have the leverage. You know.
Well, Polite Gunfight Industries are setting up factories all over the United States. And
you can.
You can have your own franchise.
That's right.
Make what you
all
want.
All you venturers, all you venture capitalists out there, Polite Gunfight has ideas for you.
For you.
Yes. Please invest. Ready
to believe you.
Yes.
The Polite Gunfight think tank is open for business.
I'll tell you what. I'll tell you where I do think there is a opportunity for growth is definitely in the small arms thing. Because I think more and more countries are going to be saying, you know, I don't think they're going to be able to bail us out. You might want to get those for ourselves. And I'll tell you something else is going to the other thing. Iran, man, if they're not going full tilt on nukes, they need new nutcase leadership.
Right. You're in Richmond for power, my rear end.
Right, yeah.
What do you think we're doing, guys? Come on.
Right. I mean, they'll be putting CrowdStrike in the rear end.
Yeah.
We have our new EDR. We'll be fine. Come at us, NSA.
Stucks
now. Your code on Deidre sucks, by the way.
Yeah. Well, that's it.
That's the thing. I mean, I don't know that we want to be seen as imperialists, right? No, we don't want to be the ones that are bad guys. I don't want us to be a bad guy.
Nope. Well, as you said before, the left aren't the hawks. They're the doves, and they don't want to be seen that way. They definitely want to concentrate more on their big government approach, right? And checks to the people.
I mean, pure pacifism, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Like if there was an AOC administration, I don't mean this facetiously at all. I don't think I'm trying to project them. I mean, I really truly believe she would love to scale the military back down to just like reserves and the National Guard.
Mm-hmm. Prepare for home attacks. That's it.
Home attacks. I think she would see no need for any overseas force whatsoever.
Right. We put our guns down. Everybody else puts their guns down.
Everybody. I truly believe she believes that.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd probably also, again, want to defund the police in addition to that, right?
Am I wrong? I thought she was. I think she did want large scale defund the police.
Yes, she does. Yeah.
And in my mind, that brings up the unemployment issue. Okay, now that you don't have all of these people in the military, how are they going to be employed? Right?
Well,
they still need jobs. And if you're not going to be in the military or in the police force, what are you going to do?
She would want them to do different government work.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I really don't think she's a commie. I mean, she certainly believes in socialism. I don't think I'm red baiting here. I mean, I really think these are her beliefs of hers. I think she would foresee the United States government as an employer of last resort, akin to the New Deal. That's why she penned the Green New Deal. She would want the government to provide, I would say, birth to grave safety net.
Mm-hmm.
In exchange for assigned work duties. I'm not trying to speak Orwellian fear stuff. I really think this is, she would write that in policy or shit. And I don't mean gulags, but I mean, she would think she would assign people to do tasks related to, solar panel deployment, stuff like that. And, certainly nothing to do with anything that emitted carbon.
Right.
Green-centric assigned work tasks and food growing again.
Right. And to your point, all these infrastructure projects, it's like, okay, well, now we have a million extra hands because they're not in the military anymore, because we've downsized the military. So,
okay. Right. That's the thing. If you imagine costs to be zero, well, then it's obvious you don't spend those costs anymore.
Right. We are coming up on a break.
A hard break.
And we will be back in 5 short minutes. Please join us on the other side. Blake Gunfight, thank you.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Como va? This is Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. I pulled some strings and gotten you front row seats to my new show, The Perfect Triangle. Live Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio Studio A. The perfect triangle is equilateral, 3 sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, 3 perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And so much more. Each week, The Perfect Triangle will blast through fake news lies, champion the natural way and natural law, unravel the Orwellian deceptions of our corrupt government, reveal the satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio Studio A for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
Please, come on. Hi, Karl Marx here. I am all seriousness today, my friends. There is this show you must not listen to. The ultimate remedy with this guy, LB. This guy has figured me out. I hear it on Tuesday, and he is telling the truth. I mean lies. Stay away from this guy. Where's my good hairbrush? Anybody see my mama?
Want to learn more about the Marxist agenda and other important stuff? Listen to The Ultimate Remedy with L.B. Bork, Tuesdays, 6 p.m. Eastern, right here on Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Broadcasting live from the peak of Mount Warning, the most easterly point of Australia, tune in to the Free Manatee Radio Show with your host, Spread Love, every Monday, 6 a.m. EST. On the show each week, we discuss realistic solutions to help you observe rather than take part in the globalist agenda. We will dig into the past to find solutions for the future. We will discuss the wisdom of Ayurveda, the science of life, for techniques for understanding and achieving personal health and longevity. Please join us every Monday on Studio A, 6 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, the Freemanity Radio broadcast with your host, Spread Love, on Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
I want to thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution, Revolution Radio.
Show them what we got here.
Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
And we're back.
We are back. So I had one more comment to make about AOC and her view of the economy and everything. I think it's very easy to just presume that there's no cost to something and it's just fear. And then if you were to free that money up, it could be used somewhere else. So that's different than saying, you know, the F-35 was a waste of money because we didn't get a produce, you know, a plane nearly at the time scale we needed. It's very easy to say, you know, we never need to fight a war. We shouldn't be patrolling. We shouldn't be sending out boats. We shouldn't be sending out troops. SEAL teams shouldn't exist. We shouldn't be using them to do what they do. We shouldn't be supporting anybody overseas. They should be, you know, dealing with their own. It's, you know, it's ironic that we'll do so much for, you know, people that want to kind of like come to the United States for work. But, you know, beyond that, if there's any, you know, rough stuff that needs to happen, we want to keep our hands out of it. Or that's the impression I get from a lot of the dovish Democrats I see in power. But it's very easy to just presume, you know, these are these are costs we never have to really bear because we don't really fight anymore. There's no such thing as real wars. We're the problem. If we disarm, everyone will disarm.
Right. Right.
And what's your plan B when they don't?
Right. So we were the imperialists, right? We just nation building, picking the winners and the losers. We were just merely in it for our self-interests, the oil, the resources, you know, everything.
I brought up before, I think it's a Colorado State professor by the name of Ward Churchill, who, you know, talked about how, you know, he had some respect for Osama bin Laden and what he did, because the people who worked at the World Trade Center in his eyes were little Eichmanns. Eichmann being a
one of the Nazi
high
level
guy of the Final Solution. So they were little Eichmanns because they traded in bonds. Bonds, of course, are used to kill people via capitalism, because capitalism itself is evil. So to kill capitalists is a good deed. And at least he wasn't kneeling. I forget how he put it. You know, better to die standing than on your knees. And to participate in capitalism anyway is apparently, you know, stand on to kneel down. So I will put this out there. I do think there's a certain mentality that might be growing stronger, that if we saw another 9/11 attack, it'd be, well, what do we do to bring this on ourselves?
Now, I don't know about you guys, but I actually did work with people that had that kind of feeling that, like,
it wasn't very vocal, but I bet it would be vocal now.
Mm-hmm. That, like, we kind of, you know, created the terrorists.
Just created terrorists. Not, I mean, so you can say, we got involved in Afghanistan. We helped fund the. This is before. This is when Russia was there. And in our, in the Cold War, you know, we would go back and forth of, you know, helping regimes or helping insurgent groups that were against Russia the same way they did with us. It's part of the Cold War. So could one say, as part of the Cold War, Osama bin Laden received training? I believe he did. If I'm not mistaken, I think that did happen. He was in the United States at one point. I think it was by virtue of being wealthy Saudi.
Yeah. Oh, he came from a wealthy family.
Yeah.
Construction company.
Yeah. Right. That's of some renown. It doesn't make it sound like he, like, you know, it was concrete labor.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it was like a, I don't say Trump-esque, but, you know, kind of that level, maybe Kushner-esque. You know, he saw what he's, you know, well, he took it to be like Western decadence. And I think it's from there he started making ties into Afghanistan. I think because he was with the Mujahideen, I think, because, you know, he was, you know, seeking the pure, unadulterated, true Islamic God. So, you know, when you've got all that brewing, there are some people that say, well, you know, geopolitically, we can bring this up. I mean more than that. I mean that we deserved it. I think people are going to start saying that when, and I'm unfortunately going to be saying when this happens again. What did we do to deserve this? Rhetorical way.
Well, we got out of the Afghanistan. We got out of the war. We minded our own business.
But we killed people in Afghanistan. So, if having killed so many civilians, didn't we bring this on ourselves?
There was no repentance after we killed. After there was bloodshed by us, there was no repentance. Right.
There's no repentance. Right.
No remorse.
Never mind. Mm-hmm. Never mind the Taliban's role in helping orchestrate or at least defend the people who orchestrated 9/11. Never mind that. You know, it'll just be the question of what did we do wrong? With the assumption that there is something to be found. There is an answer to that question. We did do something wrong. And it's our job to understand it and, I guess, atone for it. I think that is going to be a conversation that some people, I don't say everybody, I mean, down in Texas, they're going to be, yeah, go kill them. I don't want to say that, everybody. But in New York, I don't know if the AOCs of the world are going to be mad when Google headquarters hits a plane smash into it. It's not there. Well, I guess, okay, so it'll be in Virginia, even more so, they won't care. Actually, wow, that would be the hit. Sorry to play Tom Clancy, but, you know, that's the move.
Mm-hmm.
Smash Northern Virginia and take the internet down.
Mm-hmm.
Even some of it, man, you could really hurt things.
She could. Bet.
And I think that would be, well, you know, we were the who we were. So this, you know, this happens. I guess we have to expect this kind of thing. No talk of a SEAL team going in and knocking people down and did it. That's my theory. Maybe I'm wrong. I just know that people these days, there's less and less folks that have any interest in serving the military. There's no tie to any of that, for the most part, for the average person. They're very separated from any military service, whether their own family members or themselves. Typically, it's military families that do the service, and no one from outside the tradition typically takes part in the penalty on their own. I think there's a lot of hello, we thank you for your service type thinking that is then undercut by thinking that they were wrong to do anything that they did in the service. And I don't think you can thank somebody from their service if you think everything that they were to do wasn't work on.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people that do that. I think that they just think every deployment, you know, from Bush's administration on, was a work. Do you know people think that way? Is it just me?
I do.
Okay.
I do.
Yeah. Again, I don't. I'm not speaking rhetorically. I mean, I think there are people that really don't.
No, there are for sure. And
going by the words that they've said, if they're truthful with them, then they believe that. But there's been no. There's been no just war. Probably since World War II. And then even then you have the issue with bombing Japan.
What? What was the issue?
Bombing Japan.
Ah, the bombing of Japan, yes.
The atom bombs.
That wasn't needed. We didn't need the bomb.
Right, that we were beyond the pale there. Right, so with that in mind, I just think that if there's another terrorist attack, it's not going to be met with nearly the indignation that 9/11 was met with.
So, is it our fault, Jeff? I mean, is it like we haven't taught our children right? We didn't tell them to be patriotic enough? We didn't love our country enough?
I'm quite the opposite. I am very willing to teach my children and explain to them how lucky they are, how lucky we are to live in this country and have the abilities and freedoms that we have in comparison to many, many other countries and many other cultures. You know, it's good to go visit, but when you go there, you can see the differences and see how other people live, and you can do some compare and contrast. And typically, America comes out ahead. We absolutely have problems in this country, but not as many as other countries. They may be different problems, but I see this still as the country that is the land of opportunity. You know, there are no boundaries given to you as to what you're able to achieve, what you can and cannot achieve, if you're willing to put in the effort to work for it.
I wholeheartedly agree.
The shining city on the hill.
Yep.
Well, and the gold mountain. So for all the, you know, for all the talk around, you know, like the, you know, conservatives wanting like the deny history and things like that, I do think they want to, there is some papering over that has happened. So I'll say that. But there's also, I think, you know, within the left on the other side, they don't want to teach a history that's warts and all. They want to teach a history that almost exonerates everybody except.
Except us, yes.
So to give you a counterpoint, there's a historian I read. He's a leftist, Rick Perlstein. He's very, I think he's very even-handed. Like, he'll call the Soviet Union a terror state. Like, no, unequivocally. It was a terror state, meaning how it treated its people.
Right.
It didn't. It was horrid. And he's still liberal. I find refreshingly anti-communist as a liberal, with, you know, which is good to see when we've got what I'm taking to be rising communism amongst liberal thinkers.
Is he popular among liberals?
Yeah, he's fairly popular. I mean, he'll go all out taking swings at like Reagan and people like that, but he had this, I remember he talked about, he wrote in this one piece about how Isaiah Berlin was talking about how anything that was useful in Marxism was already baked in. So anything that was like, if it's, you know, giving people a decent work week, that's a good part of Marxism. Year zero, no, that doesn't happen again. We don't need the Khmer Rouge. We don't need to push things further. We just need, like, you know, decent labor practices, and we're good. We don't need to reorder society around Marxist principles. I think more and more people do want to see society kind of reorganized around Marxist principles. Or, you know, communist ones, I guess, because Marx really never got the power.
It has an allure to it, right?
All of this is the problem of the capitalist class.
Right.
If we were to get rid of them, there would be this natural harmony that would come about between people. Is kind of the idea. It's an earthly Hegelianism. Go ahead.
Which I think is foolish. That goes against
people's ridiculous.
Natural desire to own and to possess and keep up with the Joneses, right?
Countless people like would make fun of that.
Yeah,
absolutely. The idea that greed was only a result after the capitalist class merged is asinine.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's completely asinine.
Right. The communist governments, there was no greed in what they were doing.
Well, and I mean, I think I've said this about Stalin, what he understood everything needed about understood saying about Marx, which was absolutely nothing.
Yeah,
he's right. A strong man. That's all he needed. That's all he knew he needed to need.
Yeah, control the military, and he's in good shape. And
right, control the military, control the police. You're all set. Like,
yep.
There's no. You don't need a manifesto. You don't need a thesis. You don't need a 12,000 pages on the, you know, the birth of capital in world society. Force wins. The end. No further. That's all you need. Guns are all you need. Guns are all you need.
Rule one, I'm the boss. Rule two, see rule one.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's his manifesto, real simple.
That's the manifesto. And the people that are being enamored with it right now. So this is my impression. You can tell me if I'm wrong. I don't get it's like the lower the blue collar people. True blue collar people. I think it's would be professionals who have like a crap load of college debt that went into majors that were crap. And they're kind of realizing they kind of got the short end of the stick.
They chose poorly.
They chose poorly. Right, right. Exactly.
Well, can we also say that they probably received a lot of lectures and a lot of, education that was counter to capitalism and spoke ill of the United States as well.
I don't know that they did. I don't know that there's that many that took, like that were honestly reading like Adorno and Marx and Negri and Hart and all them. I think they were liberal arts majors that like would read, you know, they might have been an English major that just read about, read modern lit that was just generally critical, and they would name drop maybe. I don't think they read.
I'm not saying that they studied the greats of communism. I think there's like a
cocktail party kind of outlook that the sort of the creative class should be in charge. I think they would say, which is what I find super ironic about the lines of work that these would-be communists are in. They're all freaking Instagram influencers.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
What's AOC's strongest powers?
Instagram and Twitter.
Solid social media, right?
Mm-hmm.
She's not a, yes, she's not like a, she's not a steam fitter.
No.
She's a mixologist.
If you went to a union hall and said she never worked a day in her life, they would know what she can do. And she would say, well, I was a bartender, they would roll their eyes.
Right.
I'd say the same thing about me. So, because I, you know, I worked, you know, white collar job. But that isn't.
You have a worthwhile profession, though.
Yeah, sure. But there, you talk to a somebody who works with their hands all day, they're going to roll your eyes at us. Because we're desk jobs. Where I touch a plastic cable, plugs in, it's got some metal in it, it plugs into a router. But, you know, just in the end, you know, they're not trying to organize the local Walmart.
No.
You know, they're not in the local supermarket union because that's low class. They wanted to go to a great school, find themselves in college, right? Wanted to, discover more about themselves and the world, like going to parties and, you know, living a carefree life, maybe showing up to class, maybe not.
So, yeah.
And now that they're in a position where, you know, they're not doing as well as other people are, then no. And they want their college debt that you want.
Yeah, but so, I mean, went through orientation. My son went through orientation at Penn State. And it was just, I don't know. There's just those underpinnings that you could tell that, you know, there's a lot of extra stuff that doesn't need to be into your college. I mean, all this.
I think a modern college has to present itself as woke.
Yeah. I mean, Penn State, they did away with freshman, junior, you know, freshman, sophomore, junior, senior labels, right? Because that was just...
You told me that.
That was too, you know, they're woke now. Now it's just
first year. Second year, third year.
Yes, year. Exactly.
Fifth year, sixth year, seventh year, eighth year.
Yes. Well, plus I think they wanted to, they kind of like the idea that students...
1 year, 2 year, red year, blue year.
Exactly. Yeah. They kind of like the idea that students hang out a little past 4 years, you know, that they go 6 or 7, you know.
Sorry, get some more money out of them.
Right. they don't want to poo-poo that, right? They right. Don't want to make it seem like you're a super senior or super, super senior, right?
Right.
They don't want
to label after senior. Yeah, that's a good point.
They want to break the glass ceiling of 4-year college with more college. With the same 4-year degree.
Yeah, sure. I mean, they, that's how they make more money, right?
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It's not, you know, our curriculum doesn't change that much. I mean, you could stay here for 8 years. You're not going to be irrelevant. It's not like, you know, things are going to be that much different. It is interesting that I heard them say the one of the speeches today was that, you know, there's no way that your freshman and, you know, your first year student is going to know what they want to do when they get out in 4 years because the world is going to be so different in 4 years that what they're, you know, what they're going to be learning and what's going to happen in 4 years is going to be so different. So you can't, it's okay that they don't know what they're going to do because the world, you know, look, the world has changed in a year and a half and so different, you know, so different because of the pandemic and nobody saw that coming. And just like that, you know, 4 years from now, how can they possibly know what they're going to do? The technology hasn't been made and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just thinking, yeah, but your courses are set. right? These students are going to take the same courses for the next 4 years. And so are they...
Not to say that there isn't, like, cutting-edge things that happen in genetics, but has genetics really changed all that much in 4 years?
No.
Math? Or physics? Algorithms? Physics?
Right. And this is asking people who just left... Majority of them just left their parents' houses, right? I mean, most people stay with one parent or the other or both until they graduate high school, right? So it's like, okay, you just graduated high school up until what? Maybe sophomore, junior year of high school was the first time you're really making decisions about what you want to take and what you don't want to take. And then you go to college and make more of those kind of decisions. So, I mean, hard to say. I mean, you're, passions could change from week to week, right? 1 week you want to be a vet, the next week you want to be a biologist, next week you want to be who knows what,
a cartoonist. Sure,
a cartoonist. You have to lock yourself in to a curriculum or a major. Yeah,
I read I don't know if it was an op-ed piece, it was a whatever. They were complaining about how, I think it was Columbia University, so Ivy League, that their, get this, their film school really wasn't preparing people to be major rock star directors. Like, that isn't something, this might be hard for the people that, you know, were pampered all their lives in the academic sense, like, oh, you'll do anything you want. No, that isn't true.
Nope.
Pick the elite. You might, if you can, you can participate probably in any field you want to participate in. I'll say that.
Right. Yeah.
But you will not. You cannot choose to be elite in any field that you want to be in.
Agreed.
You might be elite. You could work all your life and could become elite, but you can't guarantee yourself to be elite.
Yeah. Not everybody's going to be Martin Scorsese or right. Quentin Tarantino or any of those sorts. Yeah, not gonna happen.
Or you know, not everybody's gonna be
Jonas Salk
or you know, Watson and Crick or Hawking or Einstein.
Right.
You can't choose to be. You can exert yourself in that field and do the best you can.
Right.
But the idea that you can go to a institution and shortcut your way in the way maybe you could in like banking is absurd.
Right.
I don't know how you come to, there's a level of naivete there that I find.
Well, especially for that sort of thing, Aaron, that's more of a soft kind of thing. You know, it's a qualitative thing to be a director as opposed to quantitative, where I'm the fastest accountant there is, I'm 100% accurate, or I can type 200 words a minute, or I can, you know, that sort of thing. That, you know, whereas, okay, every director has a different type of style. You may admire certain people and take their influences, but okay, you have to find your niche.
Yeah, I mean, that I saw somebody on post on TikTok that just to background music, like, you're better off just taking any money you would have spent on film school, just filming things. You'll learn more and you'll have a better portfolio than you ever would if taking classes. That makes a lot of sense to me. Go create. Let people tell you you suck or you're great.
Right.
And take those experiences and change where you need to.
I mean, that's kind of, you know, it's kind of the risk of being an artist, right? Being any sort of commercial art person. Right. People might just say you suck forever and you just can't make a living on it. That German
guy. Well, and there's so many of those artists.
That happened to him.
And there's so many artists that didn't make money while they were alive. The money came after they were gone.
Yes, very true. You know, Van Gogh died broke.
Yeah, Monet.
Yeah, Monet.
Monet with no money.
Yeah.
The man without the money.
Yes.
So yeah, and well, the other thing that I thought was kind of funny was they had the Penn State Theater Group that was acting out little you know excerpts of
life at the school,
mm-hmm. and it was horrible. And
of course they're terrible.
I said, you know, maybe this is why you've never heard of a great actor coming from Penn State.
Actually, there are people. The Penn State MFA program was actually pretty good.
Oh, is it?
The guy, you know, the Key and Peele.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, not Jordan Peele, the tall guy, Key. He's from Penn State MFA. The guy who played the first lieutenant on Star Trek, Jonathan Frakes.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I didn't realize he was a Penn State grad, Jonathan Frakes.
Yeah, from the master's program.
The Masters of Fine Arts, okay.
Yeah, the MFA. Right. For reference, an MFA in the IT community is called Mother Effing Attitude, because I think they're better than everybody.
Nice.
But again, just because you get that MFA doesn't mean anything. You could now I think different than I think it used to be that was the big deal. You got your MFA. These days, it sounds like your big deal is going to like the Groundlings or Second City Improv. And again, you pay for classes. So I don't want to say there's no money there, but again, it's about really like performing in front of people. So it's more like the one with the girl on the TikTok video saying, you know, go film stuff, go do stuff. Take all the classes you want. It's not going to matter if you don't get anybody to like it. And you get people like stuff by learning it, by putting stuff out.
Yeah,
one of the Looney Tunes cartoonists. I think it was. God, who are they? Anyway, he said you've got 10,000 bad drawings in you. You got to get them out as soon as possible.
Huh.
It's kind of it's funny because it's you know because everyone says you got to practice 10,000 hours, and that makes it sound like oh it's perfect practice. I think that's a lot more. It's kind of really kind of cuts to the chase. You got to get all the bad out.
Yeah.
You got to be willing to fail like a lot.
it's no different than playing a musical instrument. Nobody picks up a musical instrument and okay, you're Mozart.
Maestro. Yo yo
maestro.
Yeah.
Right. That doesn't happen. Or
you pick up. On it first.
Right. You don't pick up a football and you're Patrick Mahomes. Right. Or a bicycle and you're all.
He seems like he picked up a football. Patrick Mahomes. He seems young.
Okay.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're absolutely right.
For example, but you know.
Yeah. But so he might be only had 2,000 bad passes in him, whereas I had.
Exactly.
110,000 exactly. bad passes in me.
They never got out of you.
Never got out.
Huh.
I mean, that's what I tell my son. He's always, I hate practice. Like, the reason you practice is to get better, and then you do the game. If you go in the game without practicing, you're going to look awfully bad.
I think there's probably, you know, speaking of that, I think within high school, and I think this is probably one of the things in college that is a problem. By the time they get to college, they have this mindset that, like, you should avoid mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as we're kind of saying here, you really want to be making as many mistakes as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, and take the lessons learned from them
make the mistake, but to learn and grow. Right.
Yeah.
Fail fast.
Yeah.
It's funny, we're talking about college, and my wife just eyeing me with this onion. RA has bad feeling about kid in cloak. That's pretty funny.
Nice. Well, no, so yeah, no, there's methods out there, you know, fail fast. You know, if.
Well, and I guess that's the thing. I mean, like, do we as a society need to send only a certain amount of people off to these places where they get to be pseudo children for extended period of time. You know, living the high life to find themselves. And then alternatively, you know, we're talking earlier about the military, another group of people gets thrown into these high end, high stress situations. Pretty wild when you think about that.
Mm-hmm.
That you're going to have your best performing, one would say, your best performing students go to these Ivy League schools, and you know they might be really applying at the most they'll be super applying themselves in a school classroom where their worst thing is they really muff a test. And yet there's going to be people that are like considered lower level than them that are going to be put in situations where if they screw up, people are going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And take the combat out of it. The medic, the guy who's on a boat working the engine.
Right. The mechanic working on the engine.
Yeah.
Airplane. Yeah.
Yeah. The guy in a sub who's the navigator.
Mm-hmm.
So they're the ones that are the joke. They didn't have any better options. Had to do something. So off of your military.
I mean, the military, you know, today's military is nothing like the military when, you know, my father went into it, right? I mean, they don't.
Okay, so, right. So on the other side of that, you get called up in the draft in Vietnam versus the ones who went to college.
Sure.
Vietnam, wow. Talk about, you know, that's life or death situations versus like Berkeley. You're going to help lead the student riot because of the crackdown on the free park.
Right. What I'm saying that today's military, they don't take just anyone. I mean, they don't.
They don't just take it. It's the perception, though, that they're the people without chances.
Right. The downtrodden. The.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
They don't have anywhere better.
And Ed, you're absolutely right. It's a professional army. It's not just okay. Anybody shows up and you're our guy. You know.
It's dude. Yeah. Here's a mop and a rifle.
Yeah.
We're gonna whip you. We're gonna whip you into shape. We're gonna beat you in submission. You're going to be part of this one, you know, this man's army, and you're going to come out a different person. But you know, we're going to take the, My Fair Lady, you know, aspect. We're going to turn everyone into, you know, what we need them to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now it's, you know, you have to have a certain grade point average. You have to be able to do, pass, you know, certain calisthenics and you know, physical capabilities, right? You have to be able to run a mile and so long. You can't be overweight. You have to have something to offer us, right?
Absolutely. Yep. Totally right.
Not to say that people that that people can do all those things doesn't mean that they couldn't get into college or they were good academically. Sure, understood. But you know, it's more stringent these days.
Oh, for sure. No, that's not my point. My point is that they're, I've seen people say that they didn't even want, they would turn up their nose if a recruiter came into their classroom.
Mm-hmm.
Again, for the reasons we were talking about earlier, because it really violates their sense of what right and wrong is.
Right.
The existence of a military is wrong.
Right.
So to enlist is to serve that wrong. Is would be their belief. I think I'm being accurate with that. I'm not saying the vast majority, but like there's a significant subsection of the United States police about the military and police. And it's just ironic that when we think of people, you know, the stereotype of the people in this versus the stereotype of the people go to Harvard, to MIT, to Stanford. When you think in the first 6 months, who's going to have more is sitting on their shoulders? It's not going to be people in the Ivy League.
Mm-hmm.
No. Other than if it's a long, really long A school. It's a military training thing. But that's perception. And I just think as a result, we're in a very different like zeitgeist than we've been previously. Like there's a definite spirit of the age that I perceive. Beyond just we want to square up with history, it's very ashamed of us in particular.
Right. So 20 years ago, we had a attack on the soil, September 11th. Right.
Yep. Less than a month away.
Less than a month away. We had Democrats and Republicans step out onto the Capitol steps, sing patriotic songs. My country, tis of thee, I think that's what they sang. And, people left and the right, they held hands. Everybody bought flags. We put them on our cars. We put them in our yards. You know, we got, flagpoles erected. We were high-fiving each other, just for being American. If that were happening 20 years later, that wouldn't happen, right? You're saying that the people wouldn't be buying flags. People wouldn't be. It wouldn't be a moment that brought everyone together.
It wouldn't be shared.
I would have to agree. I mean, you would think the pandemic would pull this country together for a common cause, and it has absolutely not done that.
Oh my God, right? It's divided the country, right?
Yeah, exactly. So why would you think an attack would, you know?
I remember, because it's been 10 years, it's 10 years too long for us to kill Bin Laden, because it was 2011, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Or almost 10 years to kill him. I remember people are upset that people were celebrating him being dead.
Mm-hmm.
It was wrong. You're supposed to be above that.
Right? I was happy. Sorry.
I was happy I didn't miss him.
I was happy.
I've one of the things I held against Clinton, certainly more after that happened. I mean, the first time it happened, I thought it was kind of, I was dealing with Monica Lewinsky, but then obviously the ramifications of it were much bigger than that. His half-hearted effort to drop the missile or shoot the missile at him. They didn't want to upset Pakistani airspace, I guess. Something like that.
Right.
I forget the circumstances around it. But they had a chance to light him up.
He passed on it.
It wasn't the right time for some reason.
Came to him on a golf course and he said,
No, he was busily sexually harassing interns. Come on.
Right. Richard Clark, I think, described it in his book as being related to getting the okay from Pakistan to like shoot a cruise missile. We didn't want to upset anything.
Huh. Yeah.
But a couple of helicopters is okay.
Wow. This is what happened. And I'll tell you, I would love, there's the Obama administration, I find, I think they're happy that Trump gave them some cover. Because, man, that is a curated White House.
Hmm.
There's no Obama library.
No.
All online. They're definitely going to be, they say, providing all the documents. But typically, you put a, or what has happened in the past, this is just a thing, right? It's not, this isn't like constitutional that has happened. It's just what happens. What's been happening is someone from the National Archives is kind of assigned to curate the presidential important papers, documents, blah, blah, blah. Trump won't have a library, obviously, because all the contention around him. But that's partially supported by the fact that Obama doesn't have a library. He bought space, or there was space acquired in Chicago, because he's got Chicago friends. I don't think I'm doing anything away there. I mean, there's always, he's pulling in Illinois, right? He's brought that. He's got all this land, but it's going to be like this Obama, like think tank, charity, a new Clinton Foundation. It's not a unbiased or as razorly unbiased as you can be archived research facility where people can come and just look at the raw documents and decide for themselves what they make of the administration. And I would love to know more about like the decision-making process that they can come out. And I don't think we're ever going to see it.
No, it's been, it's too soon. I mean, maybe in like 50 years, it'll be declassified.
No, you're right. But I mean, there's a Bush library.
Yeah.
So I mean, true. It's not too soon. They could have. They had the space, but they. This is a digital age. People don't look at hard documents anymore.
No, but it's a place to visit.
It's more than that. It's a research place that you can decide for yourself what you want to see, rather than. What gets put up on a digital thing, and like you don't know, you know, it's just different. I can't describe it. When you can see things curated in advance, it's different than seeing it laid out on a web page, where somebody programmed it, and then maybe they don't put that div up at all.
Right.
They don't populate that box.
Right.
But when you just have the documents there, you say, well, here's the documents relate to this. I'm like, what's that? Yeah, it was a bunch of documents we found. Oh, then we're going to put those on there. We won't see those. It'll be a very curated vision of himself. And I think that's consistent with who he was as a president. I think he always curated his appearance and perception and communication as best he could. And I think that's one reason why Trump was who he was. He was the anti-curated guy.
Mm-hmm. Right. Unfiltered.
As unfiltered as you could be.
Right.
And, you know, he won't have a presidential library either. If people complain about that, where's Obama's?
Right.
I would love that both of theirs. I'd visit both. I'd read all their documents.
I heard that Obama's 60th party, he was raising money. He was raising money for his library.
Yep.
His fraction, you know, his small little gathering.
Mm-hmm.
Just 500 people.
I thought it was more than that. Did they have traffic trouble?
Yeah, it was much more than that, yeah. But he was scaling it back, so maybe he wanted 10,000 people there. I don't know. Hey, it's his party.
He can try things.
That's right. He made it to 60. One of the youngest presidents, huh? Or the youngest president.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was youngest.
I think so, yeah.
And Biden will be the oldest, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oldest Irving, presumably. Well, he's not as old as Reagan yet, but will be. Presuming he makes it all through in 4 years.
Right.
It's at that age, one never knows.
Mm-hmm.
But he got elected older than Reagan was. Was that right? No, he was a little younger than Reagan was. towards the end of Reagan's second term. So he will be older when he leaves office than Reagan was when he left. I'm pretty sure of that.
So what? So yeah, there's a lot of discussion that he's not going to last much longer.
How do you mean? That health-wise?
Health-wise, yeah.
I think he'll make it through. I just don't think he's going to run for office again.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I think. He won't run for office again, but he'll be fine.
I will be very surprised if he dies in office or needs to be taken out. But I'll also be very surprised if he runs for a second term. I will be very surprised.
And I
don't know what your impression of her is. I don't think Kamala Harris is making a great impression for herself right now.
I don't think she's enamoring herself to her. I mean, she was really never enamored by her base anyway. You know, she pretty much couldn't get arrested in the primaries, you know, primaries.
Joe Biden now is as old as Reagan was at the end of his term. Joe Biden, the son was at 78, and Reagan was 78 when he finished.
Okay.
So he was 8 years younger than Biden again. But yeah, no, I think her biggest score during the primary was when she took a swing at Biden, right?
Yeah, well, exactly. That's right. And then she got zero anything, and she dropped out very early. And then she said, oh, you know, this country's not ready for a woman of color, you know, in the White House, right? Which I thought was kind of funny, because who was she lambasting? She was lambasting Democrats, because right, they were the ones that weren't voting for her.
Right. Yeah.
Not white guy Republicans, old whites.
I was going to say white male Republicans.
Yeah.
Lambasting her own party. Yeah.
Right.
The one tap dance I remember around that was that she was saying, well, they were voting because they were afraid that Trump, there's this like, you know, like pull shot 3D, you know. Like, they weren't voting for me because they didn't think I would beat Trump, but they would have been able to if they did think I could beat Trump. So she's trying to fight the back on the Republicans again that way. But yeah, in the end, it was Democratic voters.
Yeah, it was right. So I mean, I don't think her base really likes her much more now either. I mean, there are a few that say, you know, she's a woman and she made it to vice president, so there's glass ceiling broken all over the place there. So, you know, that means that she's worth something because who she is and not, I mean, what she is and not who she is. I don't think that if Joe Biden steps down, that she's going to be able to run for president and, you know, have a strong showing against a Republican candidate.
I think that's probably right. I would be surprised if she were to take on we would assume a formidable Republican. I think she would lose.
Yeah, right. I mean, I don't know who's running in 2024. Oh wait.
Yeah, that's a good question. Do you think it's going to be Trump again?
I think it is.
Yeah, I don't know. I think someone will emerge by then. We just haven't seen it. I think Trump will want to be a kingmaker.
Could be.
Mm-hmm. Could be.
I don't know that he really wants back in that. I think he likes giving speeches.
Yeah, and he has enough popularity that he can give speeches now, you know. Mm-hmm. He can get paid for them now, too.
Right. Versus having to, you know, waste your time doing a job. He didn't seem to really like giving the speeches part. But I mean, really, like it is a thing.
All right. Well, we are about out of time. Thank you again for listening to Polite Gunfight.
Yes.
And we appreciate it. Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, Jeff. Always appreciate. Absolutely. Always appreciate your insights and commentary and opinions. So.
Another great night. Great talk.
Yes. Mm-hmm. For sure. For sure. And please join us back next Tuesday for another installment of Polite Gunfight on Revolution Radio.
Same Polite Gunfighting time, same Polite Gunfighting channel.
Right.
That's right.
Please check us out on politegunfight.us or politegf.us and drop us an email at politegf@gmail.com. Always love to read the emails that we get. So thank you.
Fantastic. Have a great night, everybody.
Have a great night. Thank you.
Aloha.
Aloha. Aloha. Good night.
Listening to Revolution Radio.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning, warning.
We gotta stop them. They're gonna kill us all.
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well, now you've got it.
Rest! You tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time across the